From Edge Radio 99.3 FM, this is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, the podcast.
The Dice Men Cometh!
And here we are back again for another Thursday night of games. Board games, card games, tabletop games, role-playing games, fun and games. It's episode 119 of The Dice Men Cometh on Edge Radio on the 26th of May 2016. With me in the studio is Garth.
Hello.
And Trent.
It's a time, this era that we live in, when everyone is time poor and the older you are, the less time you have. And finding time to play a board game or a card game where you pretend to be a wizard with other friends who pretend to be wizards is just bloody difficult. It's hard enough putting this show together every week to talk about the games we don't have time to play. In fact, you know what? Frankly, it's a minor miracle this show happens at all, really, every week. But it's a miracle of life wrangling and wife wrangling. And tonight we've
for
got
some
a,
of us.
As a combination of both, we've had to fly in a special host from South America.
Hola!
El Garfo, who joins us back from that that darkest of continents.
And not from the boot of my car,
when
I must
did
say.
We start doing this show at 6 o'clock in the morning? Because that's exactly what it feels like right about now.
So jet-lagged up the wazoo.
Yeah. So thank you for inviting me here on this Saturday morning. It's lovely.
Garth. What do we got coming on in the show yesterday or morning?
Yeah, well, sometime we are going to talk about what you guys have been playing this week, because I have been playing the travel game of life. I am then going to regale you with stories of what I've been doing, but more importantly talk about the recently announced nominations for the Spiel des Jahres, the Kinderspiel, and the Kennerspiel. So all of those good gaming things. Trent, you are going to talk to us about something devilish and mischievous in the world of the internet.
A possible case of Kickstarter fraud, which is unfurling as we speak.
OMG, as they say in Spanish. And then, Mark, you are going to do some El Kickstarto updates for us too.
See.
All that and more on The Dice Men Cometh.
Strap yourselves in.
You know, I was just thinking, Missy Higgins has really mixed up her sound, hasn't she?
Yeah.
A very unexpected direction for Missy Higgins. A song called Click Clack, that one on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Trent, Mark and Garth are the Dice Men Cometh on Thursday evening. Garth's just flown in from South America, where he spent much of the last week.
See.
And I was just thinking, as you were explaining that, have we actually had a board game where you are flying around the world doing some kind of shit job, like, you know, being a, I don't know, an aluminum siding salesman or, I don't know, selling wheat futures or whatever it is.
But
and you have to battle jet lag as a mechanic?
That sounds really interesting.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, maybe that's the next hotness on the Kickstarter. Now, I've been away for a week, but judging by Mark's awesome abilities at segues and making things make sense, I'm presuming from the song that we just heard by Missy Elliott,
you are jet lagged.
That you're going to talk about Click Clack Lumberjack, is that right?
Oh.
No.
Oh. So what have you guys been playing this week?
We have been playing a little game by Plaid Hat Games. And in fact, this was the second game that they brought out after Summoner Wars.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it actually has a bit of a crossover, because the characters from this game do come from the Summoner Wars universe. And in Summoner Wars, you are, wait for it, a summoner.
Yeah, pretending to be a wizard.
That's right. And how do you become a summoner? You get a summoning stone.
Ooh.
So Dungeon Run is a game about you and your friends, in inverted commas, venturing into a dungeon to find said summoning stone, that the possession of which would turn you into a summoner and then let you play in another game.
So it's a prequel to Summoner Wars.
It is, even though it came out afterwards.
Whoa,
Inception.
Meta.
That would never happen in a film franchise.
There you go. Now, the designer was Mr. Bistro.
That's obviously not his real name.
No, and I don't know what his real name is.
Would he want to be disavowing himself of all knowledge of this game? Is it that bad?
No, I don't think so. And, in fact, there was a lot of talk on the interwebs of Dungeon Run 2. Ooh. But apparently it has been shelved for some while. He's also designed some of the Summoner Wars factions. But this game, as we said, it came out in 2011 for ages 9 and above. It takes Trent, believe it or not, 60 minutes, as they say on the box. And it's for 1 to 6 players. It's ranked number 1,884 on Board Game Geek, although in thematic games it's only number 351. It's a tale of teamwork and betrayal. The mole ogre howled as it collapsed into a bloody pile of rent flesh and broken bone. The aging knight bent over, panting heavily.
I bet he did.
And gave his dwarven peer an approving nod.
Why is it that so many board game companies lend out the back of their box to grade 7 creative writing competitions?
No, this would be, well, at what age are you, what year are you in when you turn 9?
There you go.
So maybe that was the age 9 school project.
Anyway, it had taken great effort between them both to slay the beast, and they had each taken their share of wounds. But in the end, their cooperation had paid off, and they both knew it. And then their eyes found the treasure chest sitting in the corner of the room. They looked at each other. They looked back at the treasure.
The aging knight bent over again.
And then the real fight began, because this is the game where you are the final boss. So Dungeon Run is an exciting dash through a dungeon packed with monsters and traps. It's a trap! Each player controls a unique hero capable of great feats and whose powers and abilities are upgradable and customizable throughout the game. Players can work together to overcome the perils of the dungeon, or they can betray and sabotage each other as they see fit, because in the final room of the dungeon lurks a powerful boss with the ultimate treasure. A treasure that turns its owner into the most powerful warrior they can become. Slay the boss, steal the treasure, and then run for your life as your friends try to cut you down.
Yeah, blah, blah. Basically, what you're doing is you're playing one of a bunch of different characters that have got some modicum of special abilities, and you're just moving your way through a deck of tiles that randomly generate a dungeon until you get to the end and fight the big boss.
Yeah, so the modular board technology, very similar to a number of sort of dungeon crawl games, where, as you said, you flip over a tile, that's the next space you've got. Then, depending on what's written on the tile, you might generate a monster or an encounter or a treasure or something. And there's a lot of dice rolling in this game.
Reminded me of House on the Haunted Hill, actually, with the way you lay out the tiles, which we were talking about last week with Tanya, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Betrayal of House on the Hill.
Oh, thank you.
It did have a bit of similarity to that. And the other one to me it's the Dungeons and Dragons games, Wrath of Ashardalon, yep. Castle Ravenloft. So with those, the same thing, where you put out a tile, monsters spawn on the tile. So in this, you, as you said, you have your character abilities and you roll a certain number of dice based on your fighting ability or your magic or your skill to... You've got to get a certain number of successes to be able to inflict wounds on the monster or other characters or to pass tests and traps.
This is like a 10-year-old's My First Dungeon Crawl.
Yes.
It's basic. It's a really intuitive rule set, and you're sort of away in 5-10 minutes of learning it. I actually wanted to play this with my daughter, speaking of 9-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
She chickened out at the last minute, yes, because she'd rather us just stuff around with the iPad rather than hang with Dad's daggy mates.
Understandable.
I don't blame her.
Yeah, so... it does have a simple system for combat, and you're right, it goes really well with it, with a younger demographic. Compared to something like, I have a Castle Ravenloft, I've only managed to get out a couple of times because it has a clunky D&D sort of 4th edition rules stuck over the top of what should be a simple game.
Mm.
I found it to be fun, but here's the thing. You're going into the dungeon, not so much as a party, but as 3 or 4 individuals. you can work together to overcome the monsters and get deep into the dungeon, where, of course, the last tile you turn over is the boss's lair. So it goes from being cooperative or semi-cooperative to everyone for themselves.
That's right.
And in my mind, I didn't like that mix very much. I would prefer a straight-up cooperative dungeon crawl a la Descent, or a Cutthroat Caverns-type experience where it is everyone for themselves.
Well, again, this is something that reminded me of Betrayal on... Sorry, what's it called?
Betrayal on of the House,
House
on
the
Hill.
Haunted, the Hill or a that's hill. Haunted. Yeah. Because it's like the tilt that happens in the middle of that game. You kill the final boss, and then you got to fight your way back out of the dungeon, and everybody's fighting each other to get that summoning stone. And it does change the entire game. It changes halfway through.
But it is, I think, whereas with Betrayal, you don't know who the bad guy's going to be. You're still going to have some element of cooperativeness. This turns it into basically everyone for themselves. You're running for the door, and you know it's either get out the door first or last man standing. Mm. And I think it took us a while because we hadn't played it before, and it certainly went long over its 60 minutes.
Didn't it, though?
But then at the end, there is that grind down of two people fight, one person left. Then another one comes along and you fight. And it's, you know, it is that last man standing at the end. And I think I certainly felt like it overstayed its welcome for the level of game and the fun in the game.
And yet, ironically, I thought, because we only played with three, that I thought it would be more fun with more players, that final section.
Yeah, although I think it could really drag on if you're playing right down to whoever's last.
And I got to tell you, I actually set this up to be a short game because the rule set... No, I'm serious. The rule set says, because you got to make a random deck of tiles, and it says put four tiles in per player. I only put three in, thinking, hey, we'll get out of this in less than an hour. We could play something else after this game. Of course, that wasn't to be, was it?
It probably took us 2 hours plus.
Wow. So, yeah, I do think this overstayed its welcome. The other little thing about this, Plaid Hat Games, this seems to be very much a precursor to Mice and Mystics.
Yes, I think so.
It's got some of the same card stock, the same good production values. Yes. It is a fairly good-looking game.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not saying I didn't unenjoy it. I wish I'd enjoyed it. You know, it feels a bit half-baked.
It's also, I guess, where we've played something as wonderful as Descent that really gives you that dungeon crawl experience, that when you go back to something this, it's super simplistic. And if it had taken 60 minutes, then we probably would have gone, hey, that was a bit of fun.
And I guess it doesn't quite deliver on that promise of the tilt in the middle of the game where suddenly it's everyone for himself.
Yeah.
When that happened, when the person did get the Summoner Stone or whatever...
Me!
Yeah, oh, not surprising there.
I should point out that I actually won, though, at the end.
Did you
by
guys...
By being a sneaky bastard.
Good! Did you then gang up on Mark so that... Are you able to play 2v1 when the good guy becomes the bad guy?
We ganged up on Mark long before that.
Yeah, well, look, that goes without saying, but if we were taking Mark as a human being out of the equation and replacing him with a gamer, what would that have altered your experience had you ganged up on him?
Yeah, absolutely, because you know the tilt is coming.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it was a question of who we were going to send in to fight the big boss to claim the Summoner Stone, because they would be depleted after that fight. We could then go and pick on them. So there's a lot of king-making to this. I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess we had a bit of a twist where the tile before the boss's tile was, I can't remember what it was called, but it was a glyph.
Yeah, the glyph.
Where
room.
You could only fight a monster with more than one person. So you had to have someone help you to fight that monster, which meant you couldn't get past it unless there was two of you. So in the end, Carl and I basically... We're taking it turns, who's going to go and attack the boss first and wear him down. Meanwhile, Trent ran back to the door, got another ghost to give him a special sword or something.
That's right.
Yeah, as he does.
Of course.
And then sort of came back and caught up with Carl, who had done away with me because I was weakened from fighting the monster. So, look, you know, it was fun. I think you're right. I think they did refine this system with Mice and Mystics. And look, they've obviously gone on to much bigger and much better things with Dead of Winter. So it's fun, but I think there are better dungeon crawls that do it better.
Does it equate to Cutthroat Caverns?
No, because I think why I like Cutthroat Caverns better is you know right from the get-go
that everyone's
you're
bastard.
Looking after yourself,
yeah.
And you expect to backstab and be backstabbed, and it has that super quick card play.
Yeah.
This sort of, because you're building the dungeon with the tiles, it just dragged on a bit, I guess.
Yeah, if you're interested in that teamwork versus betrayal thing, go Cutthroat Caverns. Having said that, Dungeon Run 2, I wouldn't mind trying that. If they brought it up to date and delivered on the promise of this, I'd be up for having a crack.
Well, we would give it a run, and hopefully we wouldn't get stranded.
What a segue. Edge Radio 99.3 FM and the Dice Man Cometh and the sound of Gojira Stranded from the new album Magma. I'm looking forward to that and anticipating it might be my album of the year.
Well, I don't very often get to hear Trent squeal like a little girl. But when you saw this compact disc sitting in that box of compact discs over there, you were just like a kid in a candy store.
I love that band, Gojira.
Decibel Magazine have said that the new LP is one of their top 20 anticipated albums of 2016. That's not just a metal album, but that's all their albums. And is it a metal magazine, Decibel Magazine?
It is.
Okay, there you go.
it's they're a French prog rock death metal band. Or as I like to call it, Dead Frog Prog.
Right.
As I say, possible album of the year.
Yeah.
But what is the game of the year,
wow.
I hear you ask?
Wow.
Because this is, of course, a game about a show about board
a
games.
A game about
and
shows.
And card shows. Garth,
looks
the Spiel des Jahres nominations are out for 2016. This is the German annual event that gives us the game of the year.
It does, and I just want to say that clearly you guys have been doing awesomely well while I've been away with that level of English that you just displayed there. That was amazing. So anyway, let us get to this exciting news, because it is the big board gaming news that has come out during my time away. We are talking about the Spiel des Jahres, the Kinderspiel and the Kennerspiel, all of which are going to be released in June or July, but we've got the nominations now, so let's start with the nom-nom-noms. I will start with Mark's favourite category, which is the Kinderspiel.
Well, I should say we should start with making it absolutely clear that we're not alleging that
anything.
The judges of the Spiel des Jahres are corrupt in any way.
Long-time
listeners will remember that we did throw around a little bit of mud in a vain attempt to create some controversy on Reddit that failed miserably.
Yes. Yeah, well done, guys. So, look, let's start with the Kinderspiel. Get this one out of the way first, or the Children's Game of the Year. Now, this winner of this will be announced on the 20th of June, so you only have less than a month to wait. So, I studied German for 4 years in high school.
Yeah.
I can currently say Ich heiße Garth. I'm Garth. So I apologise in advance for all of this, because not surprisingly, there are some German words
the German awards. You're our awards. International man of mystery.
So,
ich habe meine Kartoffeln vergessen.
Yeah, so anyway, there are three games that they have decided are worthy enough to be nominated for the Kinderspiel. Number one is Leo muss zum Friseur, or Leo goes to the barber. Now, this is by Leo Colvini and Abacus Spiel. And figure this out, Trent. It is a kid's game. But Leo the Lion's mane is far too long.
Oh.
And he risks looking shaggy and losing the respect of his fellow animals.
See, here I was thinking that it was just a really bad haircut that Leo got one day when he went and made a game about it because he was that traumatised.
No, he's clearly jumped the shark and he's now a lion. But those two, those same animals keep stopping him to chit-chat while on the way to this haircut. Can you get this king of the jungle to the barbershop in time? So you've basically got to get your lion to the barbershop before it closes for the day.
Right.
So kids will love that one. Next one is called by Rainer Knizia. Not just Now, when away... It's probably with the exclamation point at the end.
Mm.
So when the cat's away, the mice will play. But the mean black cat is still close when you try to fill your tummy with all the yummy food in the pantry and say...
Mm.
Thank you. The players are mice feeding on the Smith's food storage and should not be caught by the family's cat. Is a cooperative game for even the smallest player, which entertains everybody, but it's by good Dr. Rainer Knizia. Mm. So there's obviously a fair bit of about that. Mm. And then the third contender is Stone Age Junior. So by Hansum Gluck, Marco, is it Taubner? I always get the names pronounced wrong in that one. But essentially...
You're the German speaker.
It is the kids' version of Stone Age.
Yeah.
Yep. Now, there is... they're the three main nominations. There is the recommended list, which I'll get through very, very painfully, but it's seven games. You've got Berg Flatterstein. You've then got Berg Schlammerschatz. You've got Die Geheimnisonville Drachenhall. You've also got Jashung Band. You've got Harry Hopper, Mein Schatz... Which sounds what? Not quite for children.
What?
Yeah. And then Sagsmeer Jr., which I think will win purely because it is Time's Up Kids.
All right. So these are all kids' games from Germany.
Yes.
None of us are ever going to play these things. We just want to hear Garth mangle the titles.
Thank you very much. Now, let's move on to the Kennerspiel, or the Enthusiasts Game of the Year.
This is the one.
This is the hardcore, this is all about us. Rah. So these are going to be announced on the 18th of July. So you'll have to keep, you know, a little cross around your diary, have to wait a little bit under 2 months to get this excitement out of the way.
And the winner of this can enjoy tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of extra sales.
Yeah, yeah, big, so big, it's not going to be checks, as not going to be as big as obviously winning the whole thing and winning just the Spiel des Jahres, but it's a pretty big achievement. So look, again, there are three games that are up for nominations, and we'll get to a little list of recommended titles next. So number one, and this is going in no particular order, is Isle of Sky from Chieftain to King, and that's by Andreas Pelikan, Andreas Pfister, and Lookout Games. Now, this is a tile-laying game. It's 2 to 5 players, and each one is a chieftain of a famous clan, and they want to build their kingdoms to score as many points as possible, like all good kingdoms. But in each game, only 4 of the 16 scoring tiles will be used. Players are going to place 2 area tiles in front of them and set the selling price. So immediately I'm thinking of the same kind of concept as Vault Wars, where everyone has a turn being the auction master and basically gets to set that starting bid. Then it goes around and every other player gets to choose to buy that tile or put in a bid. If they don't bid it, though, then the person who has set the bid has to buy it from themselves. So, again, you want to manage your going out there and putting out good tiles that will be beneficial to other players but set a reasonable price, but not price yourself too high out of the market.
I'm still struggling with the fact that this has been put out by two guys whose names are Pelikan and Pfister.
Well, there you go. That might be the sequel to Isle of Sky. So the next one in there is going to be, not surprisingly, ones that you would already know about, Pandemic Legacy Season 1.
Yeah.
Now, it is just a smidge of a massive game. We've all played it. Everyone knows about it. We've talked about it. We're doing an ongoing talk about it, which is having a bit of a hiatus while Leon travels the globe. Is this going to be another game where it will just win? Sorry, another award where this will just win? More than likely, yes, I would reckon. Third option... You going to say something?
Well, only that I think the Pandemic Legacy has it in the bag, but go on.
Yes. And then the third one is Time Stories, or T.I.M.E. Stories, by Manuel Rossi and Space Cowboys. So another thematic story game, very much in the same genre, I guess, as Pandemic Legacy. It's team working against the mechanics of the game. I don't know, because only one out of three games are competitive. The other games, you're playing with your buddies.
Yeah, it's interesting,
and I find that interesting that, especially for German sort of awards, that there aren't Euros in this kind of field.
Well, these are very... Well, I can't speak for Isle of Sky because I don't know much about it, but I was going to say very, very un-Euro games. Yeah. And if you look at last year... what one? Oh, I was thinking it was Istanbul last year. Is that right? Or was that the year before?
Year before, I think.
Oh, okay. Forget it.
Insightful radio, Mark.
What I find interesting about this is that you've got two fairly innovative story mechanics, and neither Time Stories nor Pandemic Legacy were the first to implement the scenario-based or ongoing legacy mechanics, respectively, that's going on in those games. But they have brought it to the fore,
they have.
I think, and versus what sounds to be a fairly traditional bidding game.
Yeah, exactly right. So it will be interesting to see, and I would like to play Isle of Skye, having that's the only one I haven't played out of these three, but... Yeah, how would you put money on anything against Pandemic Legacy? They do have a recommended list, which is only three games long. We've got Seven Wonders Duel, which is the two-player official version for Seven Wonders that we have all played, and Trent, obviously, you love.
Wow. It's... Well, no, I put this in the same category as Roll for the Galaxy as just a thing that I'm vastly uninterested in that actually turns out to be good.
Yeah, so it's also really, really good value, and it just won two-player game of the year. Was it the Board Game Geek? Two-player game of the year?
Yes,
I think that was for 2015. You then got Blood Rage, which is obviously one of Leon's favourite games because it just has a crap load of minis, and it's a fine Viking area control fighty game, but again, not particularly German.
I was going to say, I don't know how that makes it into Kennerspiel because it's quite simplistic.
Like, agree.
Yeah, it's fun, but it's quite a simplistic game. I mean, these are meant to be advanced games, and I, given that Seven Wonders won the Spiel des Jahres, I wouldn't include Seven Wonders Duel in a Kennerspiel. So it's like, I don't know, I feel like these games, the levels are, dumbing down is not the right word.
I think
they're
simplifying
and simplifying, and it's like there is now no award for the complex game.
I think you might find that Seven Wonders was the first to win the Kennerspiel.
Was it?
Well, I'll do some research on that. Just hold on a moment.
Okay.
So anyway, the third option...
We like to do our research on this show during the songs that we play on the radio.
Yeah. So the third option is Mombasa, where players are acquiring shares of chartered companies based in Mombasa or Cape Town or St. Louis and Cairo and propagate trading posts of these companies throughout the African continent in order to earn the most, not points, but money.
Well, that sounds a bit more like it.
Yeah, exactly right. So each round, players are choosing action cards from their hand. They're revealing them simultaneously and carrying out the actions on them. They're then placed in a discard pile, and then they're revealed later on and blah, blah, blah. Look, each company has a double-sided company track, so the games will vary quite a bit because it's offering quite a lot of replayability. But again, it's more of an economic, almost a Euro-style game there. So I think as far as a thinky game, I would put my money on probably Seven Wonders Duel. But it's hard to go past purely because Blood Rage has been so damn successful anyway. And you look at the kind of income that is generated by minis, something like Blood Rage would be surely up at the top as well.
So the Germans have succumbed to the mini fascination as well?
Well, quite possibly. Judging by that one, then the answer would be yes.
What's going on in the world?
But then we get to the big stuff. So then we get to the actual Spiel des Jahres, and again, released... the winner will be announced on the 18th of July. So how many sleeps away is that, Mark? A couple of months' worth?
Some.
So we will go again in the same order. Number one is Codenames by Vlada and Czech Games Edition. Now, this is the best party game of all time. It's great because it offers massive amounts of replayability. It fits in a tiny little box. It has gone gangbust in terms of sales, so it is justifiably up there as a great ambassador for our hobby and something that you can understand why is getting a lot of attention, including the Spiel des Jahres. Next one is Karuba by Rudiger Dorn and Haber, H-A-B-A. Now, it's a tile-laying race game with players starting with boards that are all identical. And then one player is going to draw some tiles that they will all use. They race to get their explorers to temples and first earn points basically by collecting gems and things along the way. So it's like your cave exploration, Indiana Jones style, if you would think about it. So it's a very simple, very popular game in Germany, not surprisingly. But that's the number two option that's come out. And then thirdly, and arguably the one that we are biased towards, is, Mark, you want to say it?
Imhotep.
Thank you, by Phil Walker-Harding and Cosmos. And
Imhotep.
Obviously, Phil Walker-Harding, who is a great friend of the show and has done wonderful games like Sushi Go and quite a few others. Cacao, exactly right. Has had a massive success with this game. Now, it is only released in German so far. It was released in March this year.
What the bloody hell's going on there?
I know.
With an Australian releasing a game only in Germany to start with.
Well, it is coming out later on in the year.
I put it to you that that's downright un-Australian.
Well,
that's Phil Walker Harding taking hard-working German jobs and hanging around on the dole queue.
Okay, so
I might not be knowing what the hell I'm talking about.
I think the answer to that is yeah. See, four years of German right there. So players are becoming, players are becoming builders in Egypt, and they want to emulate the first and best known architect there, whose name is
Imhotep.
Thank you, Mark. Jeez, we're like bang on there. So over six rounds, they're going to be moving wooden stones by boat. And there's these tiny little wooden boat meeples, I guess, and stones, not just grey cubes. They're stones, but they are grey cubes. You will create five seminal monuments, and on a turn, a player chooses one of the four actions. You can get new stones, you can load the stones on a boat, you can bring a boat to a monument, or you can play an action card. Does sound easy, doesn't it, Trent?
Well, it seems to be glossing over the whole slave thing.
Yeah, well, I think Five Tribes did it best by releasing a very quick, oh, we're not going to call them slaves anymore.
But this is pretending that there weren't slaves. What, did the aliens build the pyramids with Imhotep?
Everyone knows it was the Illuminati.
Didn't Egyptians invent beer because it was a way of basically giving their slaves liquid bread?
Probably, but I don't think that's talked about in Imhotep. I don't know whether it's one of the action cards. I must say.
Beer up the slaves.
Yeah, so anyway, look.
As they say.
These three games, I would put a lot of money on Codenames to be winning this one. I just think it seems very clearly like a one-horse race.
Bearing in mind that the Spiel des Jahres is all about what's going to be a hit with families, German families, in retail land.
Mm.
You know, what's actually going to get families going in and buying something.
Correct.
Codenames is a no-brainer.
Exactly right.
I am going to make a bold prediction.
Ooh.
Okay.
Blood Rage?
No.
No?
I'm pointing Connect towards five. This.
Okay.
Imhotep. Imhotep is designed by an Australian.
Yeah.
The Germans aren't going to let an Australian win. However.
Racist.
Karuba is by Rüdiger Dorn.
Yes.
Now, Rüdiger Dorn made Jambo,
made
Alhambra. Mm. He won the 2014 Kennerspiel with Istanbul that I mentioned. He is a designer of some note in German, but has never been recognised by the top award.
Okay.
I'm calling it! I'm calling the corruption in the jury is going to give it to Rüdiger Dorn.
So you're calling it the Rüdiger des Jahres?
For Karuba.
Okay. All right. Well, you heard it here first. Because they've also released their their recommended list again. You've got Agent Undercover, which is basically the German version of Spyfall, which we've talked about previously on the show and is a great amount of fun. You've got Animals on Board, which is essentially a game where you're pairing up animals and trying to put them on Noah's Ark. You've then got Defleecen 7, or the Nasty 7, which is a very simple card drafting game. You've got Crazy Words, which is a party game where you're making up pretend words. You then have Quinto, where you're trying to do some other things.
Is that that's about the actor who plays Spock, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, let's finish on a high note. All right. So look, there are all the nominations. We will certainly make sure that everyone knows who won later on down the track. Sorry, Mark. That's really bad.
What I really like best about our half-assed coverage of the Spiel des Jahres is that we started out saying that we weren't going to allege that anybody was corrupt and that Mark did exactly the opposite thing by the end of the segment. I think we'll leave it there, shall we?
Well, I think that's perfect.
Let's strike up the band and we'll come back and talk about another controversy.
Woo! Warren Zevon, striking up the band on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's The Dice Men Cometh. And before we go any further, Mark will now apologise for and correct a series of mistakes that he made during the last talk break. Go.
Sorry. Of course, Alhambra was not made by Rüdiger Dorn. It was designed by Dirk Hen I should know that because when you play the two-player game, there is a dummy third player called Dirk.
Oh.
And
it sounds like there is more than one dummy player, Mark.
And as of course we all know, Seven Wonders won the 2011 Kennerspiel.
Thank you.
Now Seven Wonders Duel was on the recommended list for the Kennerspiel. So the dumbing down of gaming continues.
All right, if you thought that was strange, it's going to get a bit stranger now because I have got a bizarre story from Kickstarter, which can only be described as one of the most half-assed attempts at fraud that I've ever seen. It's unfolding as we speak, and it's really, the whole thing's just dissolved into a flame war between the Kickstarter and Board Game Geek forums. It's just, it's pathetic and awful.
Hang on, Garth, should we make a disclaimer at this point?
Do we need to say a lot of allegedlies into this?
And I think we should say that this is totally the opinion of...
A visiting
broadcaster, temporarily visiting broadcaster, and it may or may not have any reality. But continue, Trent.
All right. Well, look, the allegations concern a game called LOAD, which is an acronym for League of Ancient Defenders. And look, on the surface, it looks interesting enough. It's a Defenders of Atlantis versus the Forces of Chaos, as you do, in a miniatures skirmish game. There's 69 miniatures, there's cards, there's 120 tokens. It plays 2 to 6, and it looks, pretty good. Yep. Pretty good. Last time I looked, it had raised about 220K with around about 2 weeks to go. Their target was only 30K, which is hilariously low.
I don't know you could make one copy of that game for $30,000.
When you think about, 69 miniatures, posting all of that out, multiple backers, how are you going to do all of that for $30,000? If watching Kickstarter for any period of time has taught us anything, that just ain't enough. But we all know that miniature games go nuts on Kickstarter, and this one's clearly going to be successful because it has funded. So why is it that people are now leaving in droves and cancelling their pledges? What's the rumpus? Well, it started when the creators of LOAD refused to identify themselves.
Ooh.
And this isn't an allegation, this is a fact. They haven't come clean. They promised instead to reveal their true identity at the end of the Kickstarter and actually went to some lengths to hide who they were. They called themselves Archon or Archon, however you pronounce that.
Okay.
Although they actually, what they originally claimed was that they are under a non-disclosure agreement to prevent themselves from releasing their own name.
Okay.
That set off some warning bells.
Yes.
From those of us who follow Kickstarter. And if there's one thing that board gaming nerds love, it's a mystery.
Yeah.
So the next thing you know, there's a crack team of freelance internet investigators with nothing better to do and thousands of comments on the Kickstarter page, people ranting backward and forwards. And it's pretty clear now that it seems that the people who are putting together LOAD seem to be, allegedly, a mob called Prodos, who are based in the UK with links to Poland. And what they are is a mini manufacturer. They developed a technology called Unicast for plastic miniatures. Oh. And they've actually been making plastic miniatures for a lot of other Kickstarters. So these really hyper-detailed plastic miniatures that are the reason that the Kickstarters get funding.
Of course.
These guys are the ones who actually make a lot of that stuff. But as far as their own games go, Prodos was involved in a Kickstarter for a game called Alien versus Predator, The Hunt Begins.
Oh.
Do you guys remember this?
No.
So it sounds good. I should have, though.
I know, exactly. This fell over big time back in late 2013. By their own admission, Prodos's calculations for shipping, again, the weight of those miniatures in that box, were way short. Fast forward to 2016, and there are still people waiting for copies of that game that they kickstarted. Also, the original Kickstarter page for the Alien vs. Predator game has been pulled, okay? And there's a great big error message on the Kickstarter page saying that it's been taken down due to an intellectual copyright dispute. Which is shorthand for, we didn't talk to 20th Century Fox before we decided to make this game.
Yeah, okay.
Prodos called this a, quote, clerical error.
Right.
So it looks like, allegedly, Protoss have created a brand new company with a new name to try and hide who they were, because they wanted to start fresh with no negativity. But they've buggered that up as well, because they've just been very poorly communicating with their backers. As far as the Kickstarter campaign goes, there hasn't been a video review or any kind of playthrough. There's an allegation that the rule book was plagiarized from other miniatures games. Further allegations that the whole thing's a ripoff of the Defenders of the Ancients MOBA from Valve video games. Look, it's not all bad. Ninja Division, who brought out Super Dungeon Explore, they've agreed to release this game retail in 2017. This is also the game that's offering to sell you copies of Aliens vs. Predator on their online store at the moment. It's all very confusing. As I say, it's a great-looking game with fantastic-looking miniatures. I really do wish them all the best, but there is this controversy raging with people just deciding to chuck in their pledges. What the hell can we take out of all of this that's going on at the moment, guys? What lessons can we possibly learn from this?
Well, surely you of all people would know what lessons, because all we have to look at is Masks of Nyarlathotep.
Don't even get me started.
And High Frontier, how are they both going?
High Frontiers has been an absolute car wreck of a Kickstarter campaign. From a communications point of view, I'm still hopeful that we'll actually get a good game out of it.
Yeah.
The thing that this underlines for me is that the hobby gaming corner of the internet, where it intersects with this new economic model of crowdfunding and intellectual copyright, it's a lot like the rest of the internet at the moment. It's just the Wild West.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? And the complaint from backers as they're leaving is they just don't know who it is they're buying from.
Yeah.
And this has scared people off investing, by which I guess the inverse of that is that you should always know who it is you're buying stuff from all the time.
Well, look, the point of something like Kickstarter is that you are investing in a person or an entity's idea, and the reward for that is ultimately the product or the feeling of goodwill or the whatever it is, and it makes it hard from a personal point of view to not be able to know that your money is going to someone who has the right intentions in mind, surely.
Okay, but in the real world, if you don't want to give your money to a particular company like some big multinational, all right? It's like you remember the whole powdered milk controversy from the 80s and 90s?
Yep.
And if you wanted to boycott that particular company that was making the powdered milk in the third world, the fact is they had their tentacles in everything, okay?
Yes.
In the real world, you don't know what companies own, own anything else. So do we really have to know who's putting up idea on Kickstarter?
Well, I think the difference with Kickstarter is a lot of the businesses and individuals on there, they thrive on the back-and-forth communication, and part of a lot of the stretch goals that they put in place are voted by the backers. And I think, is it you or Leon that's backed This War of Mine? Have you done that?
Yeah, yeah.
And part of that is, as a backer, you get to decide which minis are ultimately going to be added in the stretch goals, and that is something that, as a consumer, you have a lot of control over. You can have your say and you can make sure that you get your point across and have direct lines of communication with whoever the entity is that's providing you with that good.
Well, this,
when that entity refuses to name who they are, surely that's hard to keep a trust going.
Well, this just underlines the importance of good communication. The other irony, just to wrap up with all of this, is that many of the people complaining about Protoss or offering the allegations of being duped and claiming that Protoss can't get their act together, these are probably the same people, internet denizens, who are regularly downloading TVs and movies illegally. Now, this is a little bit of a long bow, but either you want regulation online or you don't. And I don't think you can actually have it both ways. Not exactly I am comparing apples and oranges there, but if you actually want complete transparency and regulation online to make sure that your money's not being wasted, you have to reciprocate by actually behaving like a responsible, law-abiding citizen on the net yourself, surely?
Sure. Well, the clearest example I could give is that you can buy fish and chips for about $8 and you don't know where it comes from. Or you can be like Trent and pay about $45 like you did an hour or so ago for a handmade fish with a personally carved chip.
And they were pretty good fish and chips.
So there
I
you
felt
go.
Good about myself.
Good. Well, there you go. So
all
clearly
right,
everything's
I'll step
okay.
down off my high horse. Thank you. Look, Load is available on Kickstarter right now. Go and check it out. It looks amazing. Stump up the cash if you want to take the gamble. That late 90s ska craze, that really shat me to tears. Edge Radio 99.3 FM, The Dice Man Cometh, about to wrap up the show for another week, but we're going to talk some good Kickstarters in a moment.
Well, we'll just do our retrospective language warning, though.
Oh, yes.
According to Australian radio standards. Now, Mark.
Garth.
Just talk Kickstarter really, really quickly
super
and
quick.
We'll just listen to you.
All right. Salt Lands, Mad Max, post-apocalyptic board game, cardboard standees for people. They finally listen to me and not produce miniatures, except, of course, the cars. It's all about the cars because the cars are miniatures. It's only got 3 days to go. It's already raised 58,000 euros. Well and truly funded. Looks really interesting.
Can't I just play with my Matchbox cars?
This War of Mine, we've mentioned it. It's raised 326,000 pounds when they were only after 40,000 pounds. I mean, once again, you couldn't ship that game for 40,000 pounds.
And Leon and Trent have both backed it,
oh,
so we'll be able
wait.
To put a double copy together and go
only
for like 12 hours.
5 days to go, getting quick. Garth, for you and I, Brouhaha. It's the beer tasting game. It basically combines that fun employed, you've got cards with traits on them, you actually taste real beer, and then you play your cards to describe the taste of the beer. It's almost funded, 12,000 and 15,000 with 6 days to go. Vikings Gone Wild is a board game based...
Hang on, beer doesn't come with the beer?
No, you've got to buy your own beer.
Oh my God.
Gone Wild is a board game based on an online computer game, apparently, but it's hugely popular. It's raised 52,000, 15 days to go. It's a sort of a combination of deck building and resource management with really cutesy cartoony art, very much in the style of Imperial Settlers, going gangbusters. One Deck Dungeon by Asmodee Games and Chris Chislick, the head of Asmodee Games. He's obviously learned a lot from working with Carl Chudik on Mott and I and Innovations and all those. So there's lots of cards sliding under cards, cards doubling up as different things. It's only a 54-card deck. It's raised 51,000, well and truly funded. And a couple of quick Aussie Kickstarters. Russell the Card Game with cutesy art. It's a farming game by a guy called Matt Healy from Melbourne.
It's not a Russell Crowe game.
No.
You don't get to play
it,
through Russell Crowe's career.
It's very light. It's got really attractive looking art. It's
you'd want to be to have Russell Crowe in it. Really
I think
attractive
it's
art.
Got quite a way to go for funding, but it's still got 22 days to go. And
I was great when I was in Gladiator.
Mothership. Shut up, you mothership. It's a spaceship tabletop game. Again from Melbourne by Peter Sanderson. Again, it's not quite funded yet. 18,000, a bit over halfway with 19 days to go. A quick tabletop spaceship fighting game. Looks like a lot of fun. Some people that I follow on Kickstarter have backed it. So check those two couple of Aussie ones out. We are out of time.
Yeah.
I've just been enjoying watching you talk
now,
so
quickly,
Mark. Congratulations.
Look, there's so much going on in this hobby of ours. We'll come back next week and talk about it even more.
See
bye.
Ya.
Bye.
This has been an edit of The Dice Men Cometh from Edge Radio 99.3 FM, Hobart's independent youth station. Find us on Facebook and edgeradio.org.au.